Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today on this 10th anniversary of the shock and awe beginning of the war with Iraq, we will look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with one of the most insightful chroniclers of the Bush-Cheney regime, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Ron Suskin, the author of The 1% Doctrine, and discuss the selling of the Iraq war, the utter failure of our political opposition to stand up to the campaign of lies and propaganda, and the dismal performance of the press, who became the cheer squad of the Bush administration. Then we will speak with John Mearsheimer, professor of political science at the University of Chicago and author of Why Leaders Lie, The Truth About Lying in International Politics. He was one of 33 American scholars of international relations who signed a letter published in the New York Times 6 months before the Iraq War began, warning that a U.S. invasion of Iraq with no exit strategy will lead to occupation, urban combat, a victory for al-Qaeda, and increased anti-Americanism around the globe. Then finally, we'll examine a contemporary parallel of the rush to war with Iraq in the face of conflicting intelligence, a situation that is currently being repeated as the press parrot lies and distortions about Iran while failing to look at the actual intelligence data on Iran that the Director of National Intelligence presented to the Senate last Tuesday. Dr. Trita Parsi, the co-founder and president of the National Iranian American Council and author of A Single Roll of the Dice, Obama's Diplomacy with Iran, joins us. We will discuss his article at the Huffington Post, Three Facts to Note in the 2013 Worldwide Threat Assessment Report. Joining us now is Ron Suskin, who is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author whose books include the New York Times bestsellers The Way of the World, The 1% Doctrine, The Price of Loyalty, A Hope in the Unseen, and his latest book, The Confidence Man, Wall Street, Washington, and the Education of a President. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ron Suskind.
It's great to be here.
And Ron, of course, I noticed you in the Showtime documentary on Dick Cheney, and Dick Cheney's serene denial reminds me somewhat of what the founder of the neocons, Irving Kristol, said when he described neocons as being liberals who have been mugged by reality. But what I find extraordinary is that the reality of what the neocons wrought has in no way intruded on their delusions or diminished their influence in the press.
You know, they are innovators. Let's be frank. They're innovators at saying the sun rises in the west, in the west, in the west, despite the fact people say, I'm sure it was east this morning and yesterday and tomorrow. And I think part of what you see in Cheney is part of a strategic innovation of saying that it's difficult in this era when we don't have the Walter Cronkites anymore, saying that's the way it is with that kind of clarity of consensus, when you don't have the kind of preponderance of facts being accepted by all sides of the political debate. Not that ever it was easy, but now it is pernicious and almost impossible to manage some of those areas of consensus. The neocons, and Cheney is at the center of this, simply said, we will repeat it over and over. It doesn't matter what the indisputable facts say. If we don't flinch and we stick to script, ultimately we can get through this in one piece. And it's amazing to watch the film and see Cheney ever unflappable at what is just an avalanche, a tsunami of competing reality and absolutely irrefutable evidence. He, you know, I, of course, am in a way the provocateur in terms of a particular comment that a Bush administration official said to me back when about the reality-based community. Saying that I was a member of it, and people like me and other folks who believed in evidence were. But that's not the way the world works anymore, that essentially when we act, if we stick to our script as an empire, we create our own reality, especially at a time where claim has trumped fact and assertion has overwhelmed authenticity. And Cheney is testimony to it in the film we watched. I am untroubled by anything you say or any of the evidence that has accrued in these difficult years since Cheney was in power with Bush.
Well, but the faith-based diplomacy or faith-based foreign policy and this drive-by diplomacy and the drive-by war, if you like, that we suddenly got bogged down in, it's still going on. 60 people were killed in Iraq on the anniversary, the 10th anniversary. And frankly, Ron Suskind, the new Iraq war will begin fairly soon with the fall of the Assad regime. That will immediately be the catalyst for Iraq breaking up because the Sunni are already restive. The Kurds in the north haven't been getting their oil revenues from the central government that's corrupt and completely in the pocket of the Iranians. And frankly, that is the most amazing thing of all, is that the neocons and Bush and Cheney handed over Iraq to Iran.
Well, you know, it's interesting. This, in the famous parlance, of the era, 10 years ago, almost, it's actually 2004 this interview occurred, Tim Russert, in a rare interview with George W. Bush, framed it as best as I think anyone did in that period, saying, is this a war of choice? Now that we know there are no weapons of mass destruction here a year after the invasion, was this a war of choice or a war of necessity? Bush blinked. That's one of the few times you could really see him flinch. And he had asked Russert to define his terms. What do you mean by war of necessity versus choice? Ultimately, though, I don't think it was either one of those. It was a war of will, literally the will of Bush and Cheney and the men around them, and they're almost all men save Condi. From the very first National Security Council meeting of the Bush presidency in January of 2001, Bush and Cheney said, we want to invade Iraq. We don't need to even give a reason, frankly, but let's find a way to do it. That was the idea. And ultimately, at day's end, they found a way to do it. It was will. They willed this to occur. And what you have is a failed state in the center of this most troubled region of the world. As well, you have the United States acting in a willful way without clear cause. That has undermined our moral authority around the world. As somebody I talked to, a senior intelligence source, said to me recently, I said, you know, tell me what you think the legacy of this is. He said, you know, and he's been out there in the field representing America as an intelligence person for 30 years. He said, you know, we used to be the good guys, that we were different. But that is no longer the case. That's what Iraq did. It made everybody realize they're no different than anybody else. They're not exceptional, the Americans. They're not special. They do not move forward only when there is absolutely appropriate principle to justify action. And that's an enormous thing for us to lose on the world stage. And the question is, how do we get it back?
Well, of course, the legacy of torture is such that every two-bit dictator around the world, whether it's the Assads or the thug in Belarus or Mugabe in Zimbabwe, they can always say, well, you know, Americans torture their people too, so what's the big deal? I mean,
you know, there's a moment, you know, I mean, obviously what Cutler did, and more power to him, he got Cheney to talk, which is really what I think is bringing lots of people to the film. And then he had, you know, Bart Gellman, who's a great biographer of Cheney, and Woodward, Bob Woodward and I, and others talking about what the evidence showed. But, you know, there are moments where you'd say, gosh, it would be lovely, a kind of fantasy, to have a very knowledgeable questioner with the evidence in his hand, i.e., a Truth and Reconciliation type commission or a Senate committee there with Cheney under the hot lights to confront him. With precisely what has been wrought from this very troubling era that he and Bush presided over. You know, when you look at the basic facts of this situation, and he says, I am untroubled by the fact that we tortured people, which is essentially what he says, you know, part of you says, do you know the centuries-long battle that has raged, such that nation states have, on balance, not tortured people? They have learned the hard way, hard evidence, hard lessons, to not torture people they capture. I mean, it was one of the great leaps forward, you know, of civilization, that development. And Cheney just blithely says, not my problem. Yes, we have turned back what may be centuries of progress. But why worry? Why me worry?
Of course, the film that we're talking about, The World According to Dick Cheney, the Showtime documentary that you're featured in, Ron Suskind, is pretty extraordinary in the sense that it really shows, I think, for the first time, how much Cheney captured the Bush presidency from within. He staffed it while the Florida recount was going on. There were his people. He built the whole architecture of the Bush regime. The kid, if you will, didn't really know what was happening until later in the first term. But clearly things soured in the second term and they haven't spoken since and they're quite bitterly estranged. In his memoir, Bush did say that had he known that there were no weapons of mass destruction, he would never have gone to war. But when you mentioned the Meet the Press, that was a part, of course, the selling of the war, was it not? Where you had Judy Miller being fed material stuff from Cheney and Addington and Scooter Libby and Company directly from them. She put it in the New York Times. And then Tim Russert, when he interviewed Dick Cheney, closed the loop by quoting from the New York Times.
Let me be very clear here. Based on the evidence that I've gathered, and others have, but I am right at the center of this, is that from January of 2002, now a year and 3 months prior to the invasion, Bush set a ticking clock. I mean, Bush's idea that I didn't know, I don't buy it, and the evidence doesn't support it, to be frank. From that moment forward, a whole year, he set a ticking clock such that we will invade Iraq on a 1 year timetable to set up and launch an invasion. At that meeting in early 2002, the idea was, and with many of the leaders of the intelligence community in the United States there, the heads of the various organizations, they said to Bush, Saddam may not have any weapons of mass destruction. And the fact is, if you're going to base this war on that, you are rolling the dice. Because A, he might not have any, and B, even if he has any, they may not be findable with an invading force a year or a year and a few months from now. So Bush understood from the beginning that the whole case for weapons of mass destruction could be very thin. And maybe even if there were weapons, we wouldn't find them. So he was forewarned and forearmed on that point. What occurs here is that they didn't actually give the American people choice. Choice would have been laying out the actual areas of rationale for a war. They didn't do it.
Well, but
that would have been a very different discussion. Instead, they rested it on WMD. Clearly, by the fall of 2002, 6 months before the invasion, they knew that case was thin. And instead of stopping and saying, we need to actually tell people why we're going into Iraq, why we're doing this, what the justification for war is, instead, they simply pushed forward to craft what was a hollow case and really a lie upon which that invasion was based. Bush was involved right from the beginning. And for him to really throw it to Cheney, I don't think is correct. And the evidence doesn't support it either.
But Ron Suskind, doesn't that also bring into question the utter failure of our political opposition in signing up for this thing? Because, you know, I'd spoken with Senator Bob Graham, the head of the Intelligence Committee at the time. They weren't even going to do an NIE, the Bush people. Senator Graham forced them into it, and then the neocons, Doug Feith and company, distorted it. But members of the Intelligence Committee knew it was a bogus case, although John Edwards and Dianne Feinstein were the two Democrats that voted for the war. But that's no excuse for Hillary Clinton and John Kerry and others. I mean,
well, there's no doubt about it. I mean, look, let's just think back to that period. In that period, after 9/11, the year or two after 9/11, you know, Bush basically, you know, it was a war of will. The America that Bush presided over at that point was feeling, you know, a very, you know, understandable and unwieldy anger. A need for revenge, a need for action. And that was quite willful. The country was feeling a desire in its way to be willful, to show that America could do whatever it wanted to do and would not be trapped or defined by the actions of others, specifically the 9/11 catastrophe. Bush tapped that. Bush, already a person ideally suited for this, a willful guy from the start, tapped that unwieldy energy. And that's why this was a war of will. At that juncture, lots of people were getting evidence in the fall of 2002 that, my gosh, this case is based on very little. But the Bush administration pushed forward, and that was a predicate for war that ultimately was, I think, a willful lie. There was a great deal that was coming down the pipeline, as I point out in the book, The Way of the World, where they were getting competing evidence. We had the foreign minister, Sabri, saying to us, trust us, there are no weapons of mass destruction here. He said it in a back-channel intelligence operation. Habush, the intelligence chief of Iraq, met with U.S. and British intelligence in January, 3 months before the invasion. He said, there are no weapons in Iraq. And in fact, what he said, which ends up, of course, being clear to everybody a year later, this is prior to the invasion, he said, Saddam doesn't actually believe you would do anything as foolish as invade Iraq. We have nothing to do with al-Qaeda. You've got your hands full in Iraq. It doesn't make sense for the United States to invade Iraq. What he was fearful of is that if it was revealed he did not have weapons of mass destruction, it would reduce his authority with his neighbors. He was afraid of the Iranians. That's what Saddam was worried about. All this was clear to the United States well before the invasion. And the United States just said, we're moving forward. Look, from the first NSC meeting of the Bush presidency, the idea was, find me a way to invade Iraq. That was the concept. And the idea was, is that we will set up a client state of America in the middle of the Arab world, a country with oil reserves, and ultimately, as much as anything, in terms of the issue of WMD, we will make a demonstration model, an example of Saddam Hussein, because we can't stop people from getting their hands, failed states, dictators, whatever, getting their hands on weapons of mass destruction. It's carried in this era by civil technology. The technology is available. And so what the decision was is that if we make an example of Saddam Hussein, it will dissuade others from attempting what Saddam Hussein, frankly, wasn't even attempting at that point, but what he was stuck with in terms of our assertions. And that will be a kind of demonstration model, in a way, a kind of behavioral experiment for dictators and other rogue states around the world, so they don't in any way try to get their hands on WMD. That was, as close as I can figure, the thin reed. I mean, it makes the domino theory, look like something from Aristotle, but that was the thin reed upon which the rationale internally for war was often stated. They never said this publicly to the American people, but internally, that was their theory.
So, Ron Susskind, the neocons proconsul that they were going to install in Iraq, Ahmad Chalabi, who turned out to be an Iranian operative all along, is it possible he played us all along? In other words,
I think many people played us all along.
Right.
Clearly Chalabi had all sorts of connections to the Iranians. And if you want to know, again, 10 years later, when I talked to intelligence officials and others, what they say was the great missed opportunity here, and it's really a stunner, it's that in the months after this invasion, clearly an invasion based on false pretenses, but nonetheless, one that felt successful in those first few months as we drove quickly to Baghdad and the Saddam Hussein statue fell, who was knocking at our door? None other than the Iranians. This, in a way, was the great yield of this misbegotten war. In the few months after 9/11, the Iranians came to us, and they were spooked. We had X 100,000 troops in Iraq. We were in Afghanistan. And they came to us and said, okay, let's play ball. We can help you with Afghanistan. We know them very well. let's become partners, essentially, because they were terrified at this unilateral action by the United States. What was Dick Cheney's response to them? Get lost. Essentially, it was real men go to Tehran, and we will never sit down with the Iranians. Even though the Iranians literally crawled across broken glass to meet with us, Cheney snubbed them.
Now, here we are, 10 years later,
dealing with the Iranians. I mean, you talk about the definition of hubris. There it is, right there in your hands. That actually was a yield, a benefit that fell into our laps from the invasion. Arguably the only one I can find. And we threw it away because of Cheney's view, well, not supported by evidence or any insight into the geopolitical realities of the region, that this is just the first step, and eventually in his master plan will soon be in Tehran. It's a stunner, even now.
Well, just in closing, Ron Susskind, what was going on with George Bush Sr. and people like Bush Sr.'s National Security Advisor, Brent Scowcroft, had warned against the folly of this war, and he had the opportunity, of course, to invade Iraq back in the first Gulf War and didn't because he knew what would happen. So clearly that information was out there and the father had it. Why did he allow the son to really, you know, embark on the greatest foreign policy blunder perhaps in the history of the United States, if not in the world?
Look, we talk about the reasons for this war, frankly, reasons that were not articulated to the American people prior to the invasion. Some of them very thin, some of them, you know, fanciful, frankly, by the neocons. But this was not just geopolitical. It was, in its way, Oedipal, too. There were very complex father-son dynamics, which have been written about. David Moranis does a terrific job writing about that, Washington Post reporter who's written extensively on it. Ultimately, the father's crowd was pushed away precisely because they were the father's crowd. And Cheney played that, as did Rumsfeld, brilliantly. They never had a great deal of respect for Bush 41, and they played to Bush 43's very complex feelings about his father, some of them, feelings of anger, feelings of inadequacy. The, you know, Bush 41, I gather, never treated 43 all that well in his growing up. Bush 43 was a real black sheep of that family. They played that artfully so that Brent Scowcroft and all the men around 41, around George H.W. Bush, were at best on thin ice coming into that White House. And ultimately, Cheney made sure that that ice broke. And I think that was a big reason why the lessons of the father did not, in this case, pass to the son. It was part of, frankly, a strategic plan by Cheney and Rumsfeld especially to make sure that the old guard, the 41 group, didn't have its way this time when it came to the big issues that only giants, as they would say, have the understanding and will to carry forward. That's really their view. We are the giants of history, and we will be eventually exonerated for the things we have done. And I think that right now, 10 years later, history's ledger is quite clearly loaded against that fanciful notion of exoneration.
Well, Ron Susskind, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Ian. Call anytime and be well.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Ron Susskind, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author whose books include the New York Times bestsellers The Way of the World, The 1% Doctrine, The Price of Loyalty, A Hope in the Unseen, and his latest book is Confidence Men, Wall Street, Washington, and the Education of a President. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with one of 33 American scholars who predicted the disastrous outcome of the Iraq War 6 months before it happened. But one thing that is certain, life is good.